Many troops returning from Iraq struggle with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. It took Gary Mitchell more than 30 years to identify PTSD as the reason behind his divorce, anger, nightmares, and emotional outbursts. Mitchell fought in Vietnam from 1969 to 1970. An excellent marksman and cool under pressure, he was given assignments to carry out planned assassinations. He writes about his experiences in his book, A Sniper's Journey, The Truth About the Man Behind the Rifle. Here's Mitchell reading an excerpt from the book.
I started to pick up a sight picture just as the target stopped at a stream and reached down to get a double handful of water to splash on his face. He had his back to me. He shook the water off his hands to the front and then stretched. He was in a crucifixion pose, and I took two breaths. On the second breath, I let it out half out. The reason is that the shallowest part of your breath, when you've got nothing left in your lungs, there's a tremor. At the top of your breath, when your lungs are full, there's a tremor just before you start exhaling. So you let about half of it out, which is the most stable part of your breathing cycle, and then you hold it. In AIT, they taught us to aim at the center of mass on the silhouette targets. On a man, it's the top of the breastbone. It's a perfect aiming point because if your rifle kicks up a little bit, you'll hit his head. If you drop the barrel a little bit, you'll hit his heart. If you go left or right, you're going to get a lung. The target's back was to me, but it was still center of mass. He was less than 200 meters away, so there wasn't going to be a lot of droppage of the round, and it wasn't far enough distance to worry about wind causing a deflection. It was just quick, down, and dirty. I held my breath and gently squeezed the trigger. The sound of the single shot and the relatively quiet forest seemed incredibly loud. He went headfirst into the stream, and Wayne said, "Cling."
That's quite a day you're writing about there. And you were 19? Just a kid?
I was 19, yes. I would have told you that I was grown, that I was a man, and puffed my boyish chest out, but I was still a kid.
This wasn't the first time you'd killed anybody.
No.
But it was different.
Yes, this was different because when you're in a firefight, everybody is shooting your own fully automatic or semi-automatic, and there are a lot of rounds flying around. But this was one single and hopefully precise rifle shot.
And one person whose face you could see, you were shooting at.
Still see.
Yeah.
And it's been 40 years nearly.
Yeah. Well, we'll go back to that 19-year-old for a minute because this wasn't the end. If anything, the assignments that you got became even more intense. You were asked to kill a woman, for instance, and
yes.
that ran against everything you'd ever been taught, right?
Oh, absolutely. In the generation that I grew up in, we were taught not to hurt the girls, not to hit the girls, to protect the girls, and at 19, they told me to go shoot a lady. So, you know, and
you did.
I did.
Yeah. And then the one that I have to confess really got to me was you were sent out to kill four Buddhist monks.
Suffice it to say that I have little demons that walk across my pillow at night and whisper in my ear. And that's one of the things they whisper about.
Yeah. What happened that day? Can you tell us the story?
Oh, my goodness. We started out the day before. It was raining. They dropped us off out in the middle of the rubber plantation near Long Bend. We went into some underground tunnels where there was a chamber in the tunnel where we slept. There was a radio there. There was food and water there. The next morning, an older monk took us out, led us through the woods into another tunnel. We came out at the base of a large tree.
And all this time, you didn't actually know who you were going to be sent out to shoot, right?
No, I did not know. At that point, he told us, in about 2 hours, we'll be coming down that trail. And at that point, I realized he was going to be with the other monks, and he said, "You must kill the other four." I was asking him if there was any way that I would know who I was shooting at or any way I could see him or identify him. And he said, if you have no other way, kill us all. And left. The man that was with me, the second that was with me, said, how are you going to do it? And I remembered the movie that, I forgot what his name was, but it was about Sergeant York. Saying I'm going to start from the rear. So I told him I'd start from the rear, and that way he didn't fall in front of the ones in front of him. And I also told him that I hope they run instead of drop to the ground.
Because they're better targets when they're running?
Better targets when they're running, larger targets. And even though they are moving, you can hit them easier than you can someone laying face down or on their back on the ground. So they came into the field, and I sighted on the rear monk, fired around, and as it turned out, the monk that was our guide was number two in line. He flipped his little hood back and started running. The second said, have you got him? I said, yes, I have. I took the guy out in front of him. Then I shot again, and I missed. By that time, the monk that had been our guide was running past us. And then I shot the fourth one, picked up our rounds, and we ran down the trail to where he was at. And he was sitting on the ground with his knees pulled up to his chest, his head down to the left of his knees. And he was crying, sobbing, and he got up and led us down to where we were supposed to catch a helicopter. And then he was just gone, and we got on the helicopter, and we were gone. To this day, I don't know why.
And to this day, clearly, that image won't leave your head.
No. No. You know, to take a line from a movie, you know, it's a hell of a thing to kill a man. And when it's the local ministers or monks or priests or rabbis or whatever, you know, I was raised going to church, and that was difficult.
Just after that, in the book you wrote, and this is a quote, you said, if I were a fly on the wall watching what I had done, I would say you're an executioner. But the fly isn't here. He's in my head. I can't allow myself to call myself an executioner, however irrational that may sound. You wrote that now. Do you still say that?
I do.
What do you call yourself then?
I was a shooter or a sniper. I wasn't an executioner. Didn't choose the targets. Have no idea why the targets were chosen. Have no idea what the result, the elimination of that target, did.
You did what you were told.
Did what I was told and was in the dark.
Yeah.
Still am.
You were there for most of a year. You went on 17 missions?
Yes.
21 people. How do you... I mean, this is a long time ago now, but it from the way you talk about it, clearly it's in your head not a long time ago at all. How do you deal with that?
You know, it's been very difficult. I will tell you that the memories of it, the way it has affected me, probably cost me my first marriage, has caused difficulties in my present marriage. It reached the point that my wife told me I had to get some help or I had needed to get a lawyer. So I started getting some help, and I've had individual counseling, group counseling, hypnotherapy. But in my case, and I can't speak for everyone, in my case, I've had the most success with acupuncture, believe it or not.
Really?
So it's, you know, it's a constant battle. I still have my moments when memories or anger, or, you know, I'm basically almost insane. But, you know, the rest of the time, I just have a good life. I'm married. I'm happy. We've been married nearly 28 years. So, you know, I have my moments, but the rest of it overpowers that, I think.
Yeah. Still, this has taken a toll on you, a toll that is clearly still working on you.
Well, I believe it does. And I will tell you that today we're training my replacement. you know, the people that are coming back from Iraq, Afghanistan, the people that came back from Desert Storm, they're all training to take my place. And what I want them to know is they're not alone, that they are not the only one that has ever felt things. They're not the only one that has ever cared. They're not the only one that has ever felt bad about things that they had to do.
You've done a lot of work on this, and you feel stronger, obviously, more able to deal with it. But it doesn't sound as though it's gone away.
No, it's not gone away. Anyone that you talk to will tell you that, well, the way it was explained to me is post-traumatic stress disorder, there is no cure for. You have to learn to coexist with it. So I'm still on that journey to learn how to completely coexist with it.
Do you resent this ever? Do you resent the toll your military service has taken on you?
No, I'm not angry. Sometimes I'd like to be, but you know, when I wake up at midnight and I don't sleep till 4 a.m, or when I go to bed for a good night's sleep and I take a vacation back in time, and the little demons whisper in your ear, sure, sometimes I'd like to be angry, but that was 40 years ago, and you know, there was a time I might have been angry, but not now. Do I regret some of the things that I saw? Yes, I do. Do I regret some of the things that I had to do? I wouldn't be human if I didn't. But do I regret serving? Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Gary Mitchell is the author of A Sniper's Journey, The Truth About the Man Behind the Rifle.